What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike, and with me is Kev. Today, we're going to preview the Riverhounds' upcoming game against Louisville before continuing our EPL preview by talking some Chelsea. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is one of the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen, out to the middle, back to Kerr!
So Kev, I don't recall the last time it was just the two of us. Like, after starting out this little pet project where we're like, hey, we should just talk to each other more, this has quickly become something that...
Yeah, you wrote down just the two of us. The only thing that came in my head was that Will Smith song. That Will Smith?
Was it talking about his son,
Jaden, or something?
Yeah, you think Will Smith, I think Dr. Evil and Mini-Me singing it, which...
Well, I only think of Will Smith because, what, he was on Colbert recently, and they started playing Summertime, and he just got up in the middle of like the interview and started singing Summertime on Colbert. So that was pretty cool. Cool. Yeah, but I mean, you know, it's Josh and Richard are phenomenal. It's interesting getting back to.
Yeah. I was going to say, not to mention everybody else that's come on the show, like Sean Evan and all of the different supporters. This has been great. I mean, we talked about how we had hoped that this would turn into a platform, a sounding board. You refer to it as the campfire that sort of everybody sort of collectively comes around and just shares ideas and thoughts. And it's slowly become that, even though, you know, I don't think either of us really thought it would get this far this early. But
no, absolutely not. It's
so
shocking.
So, yeah, for everybody listening, you just got me and Kev today, so hang with us. Speaking of Kevin, the other Kevin, Kevin Kerr was named a USL's Team of the Week for his efforts this past weekend against Wilmington, which kudos to Kevin. It's great to see a Hound back on that list.
Which is funny, because when me, you, and Josh were talking about it, I don't think anyone explicitly said Kerr was their man of the match.
No.
That makes, you know, USL Team of the Week.
Yeah, you had mentioned that you thought he put in a captain's performance, and I thought the entire midfield...
He played really well.
Yeah, I thought the entire midfield did really well. But, you know, after looking at who the USL selected for their forwards, it looked like both of the forwards that were chosen had two goals apiece this week. So that might have been why Herzog didn't get on the list as well. But, yeah.
He has to be just like, what the heck? Like, what do I have to do?
Yeah,
to get on this list. It's like, of all weeks, two other guys go out and score two goals.
Yeah, a goal and two assists. But again, kudos to Kevin. Good to see the Hounds being represented once again on that list. Hopefully it continues.
Wasn't he also up for goal of the week?
He was up for goal of the week. Yeah, I didn't see how voting turned out on that or if it's even over
yet. Goal.
But yeah, it was a good goal. Especially looking back on the replay, he didn't take a touch. Like, the ball just sort of fell to him, and he just ripped it one time, which is not easy to do.
And he's not, I think he's, is he right-footed first, I think? I know he's kind of ambidextrous with his feet, but, and he hit that with a left-footed volley. I mean, so that, yeah, it's great goal.
Yeah, it was really good, really good. One of the things I wanted to mention on the show, we're going to be putting out there on social media as well, is, you know, we've talked about how, now that the EPL season is starting, not this weekend, but the following weekend, we're going to start a transition. We're still going to talk Hounds, especially while the season's going on and, you know, later once we get into preseason, all of that. We're going to talk Hounds, but we also want to start talking EPL because there's a huge EPL fan base here. Kevin, Josh, Richard, all massive EPL fans. I myself am now starting to get jazzed up for it just by talking to them and talking to other people. I've predominantly been more of an MLS La Liga guy, so I'm going to bite the bullet and jump into the EPL as well. But one of the best ways that I've learned to learn about players and teams that you're not necessarily familiar with is, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but fantasy sports. So, you know, Kevin and I both played in a fantasy football league for I don't know how long, and I knew nothing but the Steelers. So I had blinders on to the rest of the league. But when you're forced to play in a league like that, all of a sudden, you're paying more attention to individual skill players, you're paying attention to stats, you're paying attention to how games played out, and that gives you a much better sense of the league as a whole and the pulse of what's going on in that league. And so, I watch Steeler games, but I haven't watched any other NFL games probably for the past three or four seasons. and I could still tell you pretty much every player on every team and every coach, and just by following the pulse of what's going on. So I thought, you know, EPL soccer, it's new to me. No better way than to, you know, let's try playing some fantasy soccer and get tapped in that way.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't play FIFA, I feel like this is like the next best option. I mean, that's everyone's true. Like, oh, you play FIFA. But if you don't play FIFA, you know, if you're not into video games, I think fantasy sports is a really good way to do it.
Yeah, so what we've done is obviously, you know, we've been talking to all these different supporter groups. We have Hounds fans out there. We set up a Mongols Fantasy League for the upcoming season. So this is your opportunity. If you've played before, if you've never played before, if you're just looking to scratch that itch, you can come out and scratch it with all of us. We're collectively...
$500 buy-in, right?
Yeah, $500 buy-in. No, that's ridiculous.
Gambling's bad.
It's complete... It's completely free. No prize except for bragging rights. But if you want to join us, it's going to be a ton of fun. Head over to fantasypremierleague.com. There's a specific code that we will tweet out. We'll put in the show notes that you just have to type it in, and you can automatically join the league with the rest of us. So, you know, you could be competing against Kev, myself, Josh. We'll see if we can get Richard to play. We're going to try to do most leagues just go based purely off of points. How many points you have at the end of the season. You can join tons of leagues that are just points. I thought it might be fun to do some head-to-head stuff, like an actual EPL league. So each week you'll be paired up with somebody else in the league, and you'll battle to see who can produce the most points. Whoever wins gets 3 points, and you end up being, you know, you're working your way up to be the best fantasy manager in Pittsburgh. So it's going to be tons of fun. If you head over to mongols.com/fantasy, we have all of the details there, all of the instructions, the specific code that you need to type in to join the league is there as well. I'd read it off, but it's just a bunch of numbers, and unless you have a pencil and paper ready, you're going to miss it anyway. So you're better off going to mongols.com/fantasy. That's mongols.com/fantasy. You'll find all the information there. Go sign up. The season starts in about a week and a half, so you don't have a ton of time to get your teams together and get in the league. But definitely go check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. And you can participate in a bunch of other leagues with the same team as well. So yeah. Kev, you got
to
get over there.
Yeah, looking forward to it. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
I've never done an EPL fantasy team before. So this will be interesting.
The past few years, I've done an MLS team. And again, that was something else where, you know, I predominantly followed the Red Bulls going into each season. But as the season progresses, you're like, okay, well, hold on. This player is putting up points. This one isn't. Why could that be? And you start following all the stats, and now all of a sudden you know everybody in the league. So it's a really quick way to immerse yourself in what's going on in the league that you're participating
it's
in.
It's a fun thing to do while the Hounds are in the off season.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, absolutely. We should see if we can get some of the Hounds players to play too. I'm going to start reaching out. Send some emails. Yeah. Yeah. Here we go. All right, so now that that's out of the way, let's talk a little bit about Louisville. Louisville are currently second in the East after dropping 3 points this past weekend against OCB. They haven't had the best July. You know, basically they were on fire. They were the first team in the East pretty much all the way up until this past weekend. But over the course of July, they beat Montreal 2-0, which everybody beats Montreal. They drew Charleston Battery 1-1, which Charleston's a middling team. That's fine. They beat Wilmington 4-1. Guess who else beat Wilmington 4-1? They lost to Cincy 2-0, and they lost to OCB 2-1. So their past two games.
I always get this weird idea that OCB isn't good. Yeah, like every time we talk about them, they're beating someone. I don't know where I get that from.
Yeah. I think when the USL put together the season, they put OCB like 1 week ahead of us, because I feel like I'm always watching them play
right. The
team that we're about to play next.
Right.
But they're okay. I mean, they're a middling team as well. But yeah, so we played Louisville earlier this season. It was a 2-2 draw in Louisville. That was that rain-soaked game where it was delayed. The game really should have been canceled. They were trying to mop up the field.
I was going to say, that's probably one of the most memorable games of this season so far to me. Because I remember, you know, I think right before that game was coming up, that's when our, you know, bad stretch kind of started. And I really wasn't looking forward to this game. I mean, yeah, we were going away. Louisville was kind of flying high. And, yeah, wasn't looking forward to it. And obviously, yeah, it's memorable from all the rain and all that kind of stuff. But Yeah, what, we went up 1-0, they tied it, we went up 2-1, and then they tied it. So, yeah, and it was a really interesting game. And to be honest, I was a little, I don't know, I was always worried for the past, what, it seems like maybe the past five or so games. I don't want to say we've been lucky with getting maybe somewhat easier teams, but we haven't been playing the Louisvilles, we haven't been playing the Red Bulls too, we haven't been playing those caliber of teams, and I just kept thinking, crap, you know, if we run up against one of these teams right now, we're gonna get hammered. And you know, maybe off the back of a 4-1 win over Wilmington, things might change around a little bit. But even still, I'm not entirely looking forward to this game. But do you have vivid memories as I do from that Louisville game?
Oh yeah, I mean, basically it was one of those ones where, you know, I wasn't literally cursing, but I'm cursing up and down that the game wasn't called at halftime and we walk away with a 1-0 win.
Yeah.
Because literally they were squeegeeing the field. They were moving water from one part of the field to the other. Because Louisville's plays in a modified baseball stadium. So they're basically where we were defending in the second half was their infield. And there was a clear distinction between the normal grass and what they put down in the infield, and people were just sliding all over the place. It was dangerous. The game should not have continued to been playing, but you know, it is what it is. We can't go back and change anything. So all we can really do is move forward. To give people a sense for players to watch, this is the team with Chandler Hoffman, aka Vanilla Ice. He leads the team with 14 goals. He was leading the league, I think, when we last played them as well. He's only one behind the league leader, which is Jack McBean in LA Galaxy 2. But their next closest player is Gaia Bend with 4 goals. So almost all of their goals go through Hoffman.
Did he score when we played them? I don't believe he did.
I don't think so.
Because I remember I was very much keeping an eye on him when we played him. I don't remember him having a particularly prolific game.
Yeah, but he did not have a prolific game, and he didn't have a prolific game in the most recent game they played against OCB either. This is also the team with the other player that everybody loves to hate, Paolo Del Piccolo, aka Snyder from Three Ninjas.
He's no team has more nicknames dubbed by Mike Sparks than
I said it early and I stick with it. This is a team that I love to hate. It just you know, Del Piccolo, he's constantly taking cheap shots. He's got a weak excuse for a man bun. You know, Willie, make sure you let him know that he has a weak excuse for a man bun when you're on the field. He's their holding midfielder. I will give it to him. He took a few. He takes most of their set pieces. He took a few corner kicks in this game against OCB that were really good. Traditionally, when we've seen him play, he's barked a lot, and then his set pieces are terrible, which just helps the, you know, booing him aspect of the game.
Fuels the fire.
It fuels the fire. The other player that I wanted to mention was McCabe. He's number 11. He plays midfield for them. He was all over the field against OCB. He attacks hard, provides a spark for them offensively. So I think those are the three players to really keep an eye out for in this one when they come to town.
I was going to say, I think when we played them, I think McCabe might have been leading the team in assists, potentially in the league for assists. I remember thinking, yeah, even though Hoffman didn't have a particularly big game, I thought McCabe had a pretty strong game against us last time we played. Yeah, it seems like everything kind of goes through him, like you mentioned before.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things we like to do, and we've done this historically, is watch previous games or recent games that our opponents have played. And so I went back and I watched some of the Louisville game last night. I watched pretty much the first half in its entirety and the little bits and pieces after that. They're going to be a dangerous team. You know, they don't want to drop a third loss in a row, especially dropping out of that first place spot. But the way they like to play, I think we have a chance here to play spoilers. You know, we say this every game, and I feel more confident saying it after the 4-1 win. But yeah, but what they like to do, okay, and this is what OCB was able to exploit this past week as well. They like to play by having their they move the ball as quickly as they possibly can from their center backs to their midfielders to out wide deep. Okay. And typically that's a like 1-2 pass movement. It's literally center back to midfielder, midfielder to deep in the corner. Once they have a player with the ball deep in the corner, they just try to hold it and get as many players into the box as they can to try to create something offensively. Okay. Very rarely do their attacks come through the middle. It's just get it as deep as you can and go from there. What OCB did, and what I think we have the potential to do, is put pressure on their center backs, Reynolds and Shanowski. They are tall center backs, so if you're trying to play balls over their head, they're likely going to head it back down. They're not that fast. If you put pressure on them, they are likely to mishit passes and likely put it out of bounds, which gives you the opportunity to counter quickly and try to pick up a few goals. So, you know, what I put in my notes was just counter. Sit back, absorb pressure, and hit, you know, hit Herzog making runs, hit Kerr making runs, and just see what we come up with.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they like getting the ball deep in our corner, I mean, that's going to, if you allow them to do that, that's going to put pressure on our fullbacks. And I don't, even though I thought Mike Green actually had a pretty good game last game against Wilmington, I don't know. I don't exactly have a mental picture in my mind of our fullbacks being very strong defensively. I mean, maybe that's slightly different if we play Willie out at left or right back or whatever he's playing. You know, and this could be a game where it actually makes a bit more sense to put him there. But yeah, I mean, as far as, you know, defensive attributes, I don't particularly see our fullbacks being strong in that area. So, I mean, yeah, if we allow them to do that, that could be a real, I don't know, weakness for us. So, yeah, I mean, it absolutely makes sense to just not let them do that. And so by putting pressure on the center backs, yeah, that could do a good job. I mean, and it seems like, you know, Herzog will obviously want to do that. you know, I think Aguilar doesn't really have a problem, you know, sticking his foot in and chasing down some balls as well. So,
well, and the other thing is, too, is if you give their center backs the opportunity to get the ball and then you put pressure on them, they've already moved most of their team up the field, which creates tons of space in the middle of the field for somebody like an Okai, somebody like an Earls to just step in, intercept the ball, and then we go the other way quickly. So,
yeah, I mean, if we can play high defensively, yeah, I think that sounds like that would work really well.
Yeah, and I mean, there were a few times in the last game where Parks got in behind them, where Herzog got in behind them, and just we couldn't finish because of the sloppy conditions. So this is a team that is beatable. You know, we've said before how every single game we're like, the Riverhounds can beat them. And we saw the fruits of that in the last game against Wilmington. We have the talent to do it. Now we just need to see if it pays off on the field. So,
yeah. And we might have a, as crazy as this sounds, we might have a slight psychological edge over them. Because to be honest with you, I think last time when we played them in Louisville, I think we were the better team on the night. And so, you know, given our league position, you know, maybe if the players think back to the last meeting, you know, they can at least hang their hats on, you know, saying, you know, last time out, we were better than you. And so hopefully we can do that again.
And I mean, psychologically, Louisville's going to come into this game thinking they can't lose. And we come into it saying, what do we have to lose? Like, we almost have a chip on our shoulder. Like, yeah, we're at the bottom of the table, but we just won 4-1. We learned how to score again. Let's go do it again.
And Wilmington probably came out with that same mindset
last
game. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So, I guess the one thing is, and I haven't seen the official report yet. We'll have to check. I don't know if Campbell's going to be playing. I think he's not allowed to play due to yellow card accumulation. So, what do you think we do at center back, Kev? Because you alluded to maybe having Willie play out wide to shut down that wide play.
Right. Yeah. No, I think Campbell is probably out, because what didn't we talk in the last show about like Boggs potentially filling in there or something like that? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, especially with Hoffman and McCabe, I don't want to see someone like Boggs or Branson sitting back there. I'm quite happy with Adelai. Yeah, I mean, if we can set up correctly, hopefully the play never comes to the point of our fullbacks having to defend a lot. So I think, yeah, there's not much of a choice to put Willie back in the center and to be partnered with Adelai. And then, I don't know, maybe, I mean, Hollingsworth, There has to be something going on with him, because I mean he's never had a bad game in my mind, and you know he has the pace to get back and do a defensive job as well. Right back maybe gets a bit more tricky. I mean, you know, Russell kind of fell out of favor, it seems like, pretty recently, although I think he's had some pretty strong games earlier in the season. I don't know.
In terms of, you know, you sort of talked your way into a potential back line here. Obviously, everything we say could change. But say we go with a back line of Hollingsworth, Hunt, Adelai, and Campbell. Russell. What do you do about midfield and forward? Do you roll out the same thing that we saw in the last game?
I think more or less. You know, especially if we come off of a 4-1 win against a team that we weren't particularly supposed to beat. And I think everyone had a strong enough game. So if you start benching people who had a good game, you start, you know, putting in this attitude, well, even if I perform well, then there's still not a chance that I can work my way into the starting 11. I think everyone played well. I think the formation could fit. You know, it seems like, I don't know, mentally in my head, I have a 4-4-1-1 that we played against Wilmington with Herzog kind of having that freer number 10 role. I think that works. I think that allows you to get all the midfield players that you want to get into the lineup. I think the biggest question really is, I think the midfield and the forwards sort themselves out. I mean, I think Herzog and Aguilar are going to start. Kerr is going to start. You would think Maloto starts. You would think Earl starts. And I think Okai had a good enough game, you know, previously, where I think all those names fill in for themselves. I think the back four is just the trickiest people to put on the team sheet.
Yeah, I think Okai's played his way into the starting lineup. I think what could be very interesting in this game, and obviously we'll just have to wait and see, is with Louisville having their center backs sort of being that fulcrum that the ball works its way through, they like to get their fullbacks higher up the field. Ben Newnham, who was on the Hounds last year, and I forget the name of their other outside back, they like to get pretty high up the field, which is fine. But if we have Maloto and Kerr playing out wide in midfield and they can get behind them, we could spring some odd number attacks from out wide and force their center backs to get pulled out of position, which could be interesting.
Yeah, it's this kind of game that you have to play, right? It's either you can look at it that way and saying, oh, that's an area of the field that we can exploit. Whereas simultaneously, I'm sure Louisville is thinking, well, you know, if Kerr and Maloto are being played out wide, we know they're dangerous players. Let's keep them honest and push them back and force them to do a defensive job. Which, you know, I could see Kerr doing, but Maloto, I don't think is too eager to play the defensive game.
I mean, you may just have to do some sort of rotation where, you know, one goes high and all of a sudden the rest of the midfielders sort of just shift around to cover.
Well, and honestly, like if you have the athleticism, it's a tough thing to pull off and it's a bit risky, but if you play a really high line, even try to play like an offensive, an offside trap, you know, that then you're not having to worry about Kerr and Maloto marking their high fullbacks. You just get your fullbacks on their wide players and press everyone up. But yeah, it's a dangerous game to play. Who knows if Brandt's actually been drilling that into their heads this entire time. And, you know, so who knows? But a lot of pressure and expectations are going to fall on our wide players, particularly in this game.
Yeah. No, I agree. So I think that the way we approach this game is, I know it's at home, I know we just came off the win, I think you play for the draw and you take your chances when you get them. I think it's a sit back, absorb the pressure, you let your guys go high, and if we're able to create a fluky goal or two, then fantastic. But in terms of actual predictions, Kev, make a call here. How do you think this shakes out?
Yeah, I mean, well, just, you know, can you imagine if we get two podcasts where we don't have to talk about a loss? I mean, that'd be great. So, yeah, I'm all for playing for a draw.
EPL, here we come. Yeah.
Yeah. realistically, you know, hopefully not only the players but the fans will be on a bit of a bounce after the result in Wilmington, you know, and playing a team like Louisville. So hopefully everyone will be up for it. I'm not going to be blindly optimistic and predict two wins on the bounce. But I think a draw is probably in the works. I don't see us necessarily keeping a clean sheet against a Louisville offense. But at the same time, you know, Kerr, Herzog, they're probably feeling it right now as far as goals. So I would back them to maybe slot one in. So yeah, I think a 1-1 draw is probably in the works.
I'm going to be blindly optimistic. I'm going to say a 2-1 win. I don't think we're going to keep Louisville off the sheet, but I do think that we need to be patient, don't force things, and take our chances when we get them. Because, like I said, Louisville center backs can be beaten, especially with speed. I mean, this may be the game that Aguilar just opens it up, where he's just running in behind them and we just keep feeding him the ball. I could see this being a game where Herzog does not get past the two center backs all game, and all he's doing is threading balls through to Kerr and Aguilar, and they're making runs into space. And
he's found his assisting boots.
Yeah. So I'm going to call 2-1 win. We'll see. That would be awesome if we get back-to-back wins, especially against a team like Louisville, who, like I said, love to hate.
Yeah.
So the game is this Friday at 7 p.m. at Highmark Stadium. It should be a great game. They're not calling for rain. Knock on wood.
just wait.
Yeah. And like I said, it potentially has upset written all over it. So get out to the game. It'll be a great way to spend a Friday night. And go get them hounds. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some EPL action with Justin Weibel, who is a local Chelsea fan.
We'd love to hear from you. Find us on Twitter at Mongols, on Facebook at Mongols, and email us at howl@mongols.com. Any questions, comments, or reactions read on air could win you your own Riverhounds jersey. Thanks!
And we're back. Continuing our quest to get supporters from the various Premier League teams on the show. On our last episode, it was all red. We had Arsenal and Liverpool, so it's only fitting that we swing the other way and kick things off with a blue. Justin Weibel has offered to join us to talk about Chelsea. Justin, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm pumped because we were exchanging emails back and forth, and you mentioned that you've written for CFCNet for the past 8 years. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about CFCNet and what sort of stuff you guys do over there?
Sure. It's a blog that's run by Chelsea supporters. I started actually from their old forums, which I'm not sure whether they're going to exist or not. But it's an extension of basically a fanzine that started in the UK for Chelsea, which is known as CFC UK. They pass out little magazines for about £1 a piece before matches. So there's an online component, and that's us. It's a blog, and there are a few bloggers that write various things for the site, daily updates, transfer things. Me, I do match reports, and I also generally do a preview that kind of looks at a few different things tactically from the next opponent to look out for ahead of the match, and I try to get one up for every Chelsea match and on every opponent, although sometimes it's more difficult than others. This year, since we're not in Europe, it should be a lot easier to get one out every week. But that's generally speaking what I do for them. We just got an RSS feed hooked up with the Metro, which is a paper in London, so we're hoping that goes well, and we'll see where it goes this year.
That's awesome. And so you're a tactics guy, huh?
You could say that. Started to look at it as a giant chess match at times.
Yeah, it's interesting because Kev and I sort of got involved with the Hounds and talking about the Hounds when we realized we were both sort of talking on that next level tactics chess match sort of stuff, and so we love to geek out about that sort of thing. So I think it'll be great, you know, to go over and check out some of your pregame reports this season and see what you're thinking about, and you know, maybe have you back to talk about some stuff. But that's getting a little down the road. Let's actually talk about Chelsea here for a little bit. Tell us a little bit about Chelsea as a team, you know, where they play, colors, general history, all that sort of stuff.
Well, Chelsea play in West London, in a wonderful, fashionable part of it. So if you ever go and visit Stamford Bridge, there's a lot of kind of fancier type things around it. The stadium's called Stamford Bridge. Our colors are royal blue and white, occasionally with a tinge of red because there's an extension of Chelsea known as the Chelsea Pensioners. They're the retired soldiers from the British Army. So in honor of them, occasionally we will wear red in some form of our kit. That changes from season to season. And just in general, those are our colors. We've been around since 1905, bounced between various different leagues, and we've just really established ourselves as a true Premier League team in the 90s after some kind of rough times in the 80s when the team almost went out of business and completely ceased to exist.
No, that's all. I had no idea about the whole red thing and supporting, you know, troops and stuff like that. That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Like I said, no idea about that. So learn something new every day. When we talk to you, you're in Mount Lebanon, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
So how did you become a Chelsea supporter?
Well, back in the kind of late 90s was the renaissance of Chelsea, because after the 80s when we almost went out of business, that was very bad. But then Ruud Gullit came in 94, and he bought a little Italian guy by the name of Gianfranco Zola. And I came upon him kind of late 90s, early 2000s. He led Chelsea to an FA Cup. We won the Cup Winners' Cup in 1998. Since he was so small and I'm not very large in stature, I kind of became amazed by this little guy running around, doing back heels into the net, putting kicks over walls. Just a really, really, a very good guy, a very nice guy, and also a very, very talented player. Probably one of the better foreign-based players that the Premier League has ever seen.
That's awesome. And so it sounds like you've been a Chelsea fan for a while. You know, what would you say has been your greatest memory of all of your time being a Chelsea fan?
Well, that's easy. May 19th, 2012. The night we went to the Allianz Arena in the Champions League final and beat Bayern Munich in their own backyard to win the Champions League for the first time in our history.
I remember that. And was that the season, I don't want to say you guys sort of like parked the bus, but you did it by playing sort of shutdown defense and just getting goals where you could.
Yeah, we didn't play the most attractive football, but it was it worked.
You won. You got some hardware. So you can't.
We got the European Cup, and better yet, we knocked Tottenham out of the Champions League that year, and they didn't qualify.
I was sort of doing some digging here on Chelsea just to sort of familiarize myself. I have not been a huge EPL fan to this point, but even looking through the roster, there were a number of names that jumped out at me. The one, John Terry, this is his 22nd year playing for Chelsea.
Like, yes.
The guy just doesn't stop, does he?
No, and it's funny because a number of managers over the years have actually tried to get him to stop. When we won the Europa League the year after the Champions League, Rafa Benitez took over for the second half of the season, and he basically said that he didn't think he could play more than once a week. There have been various managers, even up until last season. It was left till, well, probably the very end of the season before we even knew if he was going to come back for this year. Yeah. He was out of contract, and there were talks that the club wasn't going to renew him, which is sad because he's been with us since he was a young boy.
Yeah,
He came through the youth academy. He's the last youth academy prospect to make and solidify himself in the first team. So he is basically Mr. Chelsea.
Yeah, it's good to have players like that around, though. That sort of epitomize, you know, the club and have sort of been there forever. You know, it's we've said, you know, Kevin's a Liverpool fan, and you know, Steven Gerrard was that for them until he up and left to go to LA Galaxy. But that is a very redeemable quality that I think people sometimes overlook are these, you know, hometown heroes that are just, that's their club. They just stay with them forever. And, you know, he's still performing. So I guess we'll see what happens this season. I'd love to see him stick around because I follow loosely the New York Red Bulls from the MLS, and Matt Miazga, who was signed by Chelsea last year. Do you think that he's learning anything from Terry over there? And do you think he'll see the field at all this year?
I'm assuming he's probably going. Well, I guess he would go out on loan.
Okay.
I think it's a good time. He got a little bit of a taste last season of the Premier League. We played him in, I think, two matches. The second of his matches, he got hauled off. I think it was against Villa. He got pulled off after 45 minutes at the half. I like what I see out of him out of raw talent, mm-hmm. but I think there's – it's there, but I think with him it's just a matter of becoming a little bit more streetwise as to how the rest of the world plays football. Mm-hmm. Because I think there are times when he seemed a little too, I would say, naive as to what attackers were trying to get him to do mm-hmm. and coercing him into fouls and clearances and hurrying him and things like that. So I think it's just a learning curve of going from – what from MLS and then taking a step up to a team that's challenging for honors, even though we were 10th last year, who expects to be in the Champions League every year. But I think he's got a lot of promise, and we'll see where he goes this season.
So, yeah, and I totally agree with that in terms of the raw talent and needing just that extra push, just a little more time to develop at the international level. From your perspective, why do you think fans should be excited about this upcoming season? You mentioned, you know, Chelsea came in 10th last year. Do you think they're going to do better this year, or are there other factors that, you know, you don't even care about standings that you think are more important?
Two words: Antonio Conte.
and the season of the manager strikes again.
Well, we've had a lot of different managers, but you can't argue with the success. Since 2004, we've won pretty much everything there is to win. Mm-hmm. So even though we've had the revolving door, it seems to have worked until last season where it just went completely wrong. But Conte gives us a lot of room to hope. I mean, if you watched the Euros this summer, you saw what he's capable of doing as a manager tactically and with motivating a squad. That Italy team was nowhere near the most talented team in Europe in the Euros mm-hmm. this year, but he took them to almost getting to a semifinal and eventually a final. So I like him. I like him, and also because not because of necessarily defensive football, but I like what I call footballing robots. I like my managers who drill patterns of play and basically train the player to respond to situations without having to think about them. Like, one player goes here, you know you run into this space. And that's what Conte is doing. He's very organized. He's very clearly defined on what he wants everyone to do. Our early preseason matches have kind of shown how, when you look at the top view, because our cameras, for some reason, for these friendlies in the U.S. are higher. But you can see that everyone moves as a unit. Everybody goes in a specific way. Plus, you can't argue with the guy standing and running up and down the touchline shouting the entire time.
Yes, we love the passion. How do you think Chelsea will finish this year?
I don't think we finished 10th. I don't think we could get nearly as bad as we were last year. But I'm not going to quite say that we're going to challenge for the title. I still think there are a couple places where, depending on whether we strengthen or not, could determine whether we really can challenge for a title or whether we'll just end up being a good season, being in the top four and maybe challenging in a cup.
I was going to say, do you think they'll challenge for a Champions League spot?
I think we can. I think there are a couple places that we need to look at, but I think the manager's got the right idea with forging a team spirit first, and he's very much trying to get the group together. And if you've read some papers, there's all sorts of talks of players going in and out, but he's one of those that if you don't do it his way, you aren't useful to him.
Yeah.
So he'll make that change.
No, it sounds like it's going to be an exciting season. You know, I can't wait to check it out. And, you know, here's your opportunity, Justin, to make your pitch, you know, to the listeners and to myself, who doesn't have an EPL team yet, though I keep getting swayed in all sorts of different directions. Why do you think Chelsea should be Pittsburgh's official EPL team for 2016?
Well, first of all, we wear blue, which is good. A color that isn't red. Also, we're a team that's been around a long time, and despite other supporters groups and people saying that we have no history, we are a team that has won, has beaten Real Madrid in a Cup Winners' Cup back in the 1970s. We beat Leeds in 1970 to win the FA Cup. We became the first English team to have held all the major European trophies, winning the Europa League, the Champions League, the UEFA Super Cup, and we also won, can't remember the other one, the old Cup Winners' Cup. So we're the first team to do all that. We've also have a rich history recently of trophies. Abramovich, our current owner, is a Russian billionaire, but he bought it and essentially saved the club in 2003 when he made the purchase. we were pretty much going to go bankrupt if he doesn't make that purchase of us. So we would have gone into administration, and who knows where we would have ended up. But it's a small but passionate group of supporters in Pittsburgh. Most of us show up every week. And some come in every now and then and from various different areas. But it's a very good club to support. Plus, if you go to London, it's easy to find.
And you mentioned, showing up every week. Where is it that you guys are meeting up to watch games and hang out?
We go to Piper's Pub generally. I know there are some people that go other places, but I and a couple of my friends that pretty much go every week, there are about three or four of us that are always there, go to Piper's Pub for every match day. I myself am there at 7:30 every morning, sitting at one of the four high-top tables since I get there at the crack of dawn. But I'm always there except for when I have to work on Saturdays. But we're very passionate. We like our football. And it's not just Chelsea. We talk about other sports and various other things. So it's a nice social gathering time to talk about whatever you want.
No, that's
the Blues.
It sounds like a blast. Like I think we mentioned it on one of the shows where Kevin and I just randomly stumbled into Piper's one, I think it was a Sunday morning, and it might have been Chelsea that was playing, but just the atmosphere of being there with other supporters is just, it's amazing. Like, you can't even describe it. You sit down, you have a drink, get yourself some eggs and sausage and just watch some football, and it's awesome. So
yes.
So kudos to you for being diehard and being there at 7:30. If there are people out there, if there are listeners out there that want to come join you, how should they contact you? You're on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle? And where can they find you on CFCNet?
All right. On CFCNet, you just have to search by my name, Justin Weibel. My Twitter account is actually my full name, Justin Weibel. I use it kind of just for my writing. So you'll also catch links usually to my articles from that Twitter feed as well. I don't actually have a Chelsea logo as my Twitter handle. You'll find me by having the wonderful Don Quixote penguin waving at me.
That's all right. No worries there. But this has been fantastic. Thank you for coming on, talking Chelsea, getting everybody excited about the upcoming season. We really appreciate it. And like I said, as we go through the season here, we'd love to have you back on and talk some more Chelsea and just keep the conversation going. So thanks again.
Sure, no problem.
So, Kev, it was great having Justin on the show. What are your thoughts on Chelsea?
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting season. it's obviously their last season was very unexpected. Probably not as unexpected as Leicester winning the title, but close. firing Mourinho. I think Conte looks like a really good manager. He did a really good job with the Italian side in the European Championships. I got the chance to watch them a bit up close in a preseason game against my team, Liverpool, over in America. I wasn't there. I just watched highlights. And already he's kind of putting his fingerprint on the team. They look very organized, very defensively oriented, and they're going to be hard to break down. And anytime you set up a team like that but still have the individual talent going forward, like Hazard, Willian, they're gonna create chances, obviously. My only real hope, being a Liverpool fan, because obviously I don't want to see Chelsea doing well. My only real hope is it'll take some time for Conte to get settled in. I would very much strongly expect them to be in the top four this season. I think they'll be. I wouldn't necessarily say they'll be an exciting team to watch. I'll be watching them with intrigue, especially if you enjoy the more kind of tactical side of the game rather than free-flowing goals all over the sheet. So yeah, it'll be I think I'll be more interested to watch them now that Conte's at the head than Mourinho.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm, like I said, I've said this before, this will be my first year really sort of engrossed in the EPL, but what's most alluring to me is these tactical battles that are going to go on between these managers that are simply just world-renowned. And to think, you know, we sit here and we just talked about earlier in the show about, oh, this is what Louisville does, so this is what Pittsburgh could do to counter that. Well, when you have somebody of that level where you start thinking like, okay, you know, Conte's thinking like, okay, this is what Pep does, so this is what we're going to do. And at the same time, Pep's thinking, well, this is what we normally do. This is what Conte's going to think we're going to do, so this is how we're going to try to counter what we think Conte's going to try to... Like, that sort of mind game, that chess match that goes on between the managers is just like... My head feels like it's going to explode, but it's so amazing to watch play out.
Absolutely. No, and I think all of these managers... I think potentially Arsene Wenger from Arsenal is a slight exception. You know, we heard on the interview last week how maybe Wenger has a reluctancy to kind of change up systems week to week. You know, Klopp, Conte, Mourinho, they have Pep. They have no problem doing that. And so, and I also think it's a really interesting time in world football. I think I briefly mentioned this earlier on in one of the podcasts, but I think for the past maybe 5 years or so, you know, since Mourinho won the Champions League with Inter and Benitez won the Europa League with Sevilla, I think, both of them kind of made this 4-2-3-1, the popular formation, and also this kind of implicit style worked into that formation. I think we're getting to a time in world football where that's starting to change. I mean, you see Leicester winning the league last year with a 4-4-2. Playing very counter-oriented. You see Atletico Madrid doing very well in Spain, playing a 4-4-2, being very compact and hitting people on the counter. I think Conte might do something similar. So I think it'll be a very interesting time where it's, you know, people are going to be lashing out different formations left and right, different systems within those formations left and right. And yeah, I think the tactics side of each game this season is going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, and you know, just, I guess, giving everybody a little bit of a taste of what to expect from us as it in regards to the EPL. You know, we've had some discussions about how we're going to talk about the EPL, and we'll talk about that in more detail in probably the next show. But what you can expect, at least, you know, while the Hounds are still going on, is we're still going to cover the Hounds the same way that we have been. We're still going to have a preview show. We're still going to have the recaps. But, you know, probably on the weekends, we'll get back into it, and we'll probably spend the second segment talking about a few of the EPL games, one of the games being, you know, whatever game Pittsburgh's official team is. So that's why it's so important to go out to mongols.com/EPL, vote for your team. That way it ensures that we're talking about your team every week. We're going to make sure that we're going to have a lot of these people back on who we've had on to talk about their team already, you know, to give some more insight from, you know, a deep-rooted supporter's perspective of how the team's performing, and really just continue that conversation and sort of see how it all sort of works its way out. You know, a lot of what we've done so far this season with the podcast has been trial and error. It's, you know, let's try this. Does this work? Is this what people like? No? Okay, well, let's try this other format until we sort of get into a groove of what feels good. And we'll do that again here and see what happens. You know, by the time the Hound season's over, we'll probably have a standalone EPL show, and it'll be fully fleshed out, and we'll have people on, and it'll be a blast, and we'll just keep the good times rolling. So,
yeah, we get better if we get good feedback from you guys.
So, yeah. So you
please let
us
know what we're doing wrong and what we're doing right. That helps everyone. That's a win-win for everyone.
Yeah. So let us know on Twitter. Let us know on Facebook. Let us know via email if you don't want to do anything publicly. Howl@mongols.com. Otherwise, you know, I think that's pretty much it. We talked Chelsea on this episode. Coming up this weekend, when we recap the Louisville game, we're also going to be talking Everton, and we're going to talk Spurs as well. So we got those two interviews lined up. So that'll be great. If you've been waiting for them, they're coming. And yeah, otherwise, Kev, anything else on your end?
I think that's it.
Awesome. All right, for Kev, I'm Mike. Thanks, everybody, and stay tuned, because we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.